And this is the oversight on our part, is we have not gone back and made our terms clear in the world of large language models. Large language models are wildly different from classic AI. What AI was when we wrote those terms was different.
Sup, Packers, we've got an exciting announcement. ThreatLocker's Zero Trust World Conference is back in 2026. It's going to be March 4th to March 6th in Orlando, Florida. It's freaking gorgeous down there too during that time. And yours truly is going to be there. I'm going to be there on Wednesday, March 4th. I'm going to be leading a hands-on hacking workshop. I'll be one of many. So there's lots of fun hacking workshops you can get involved in. And it's going to be a great time. There's tons of sessions, workshops, other people there to network with. It's going to be a great conference. So if you're local to Orlando or if you're up for the travel, this is a great way for you to use that employer training budget that you've got. Also, for critical thinking listeners, there's a discount of $200 off. You can use the code ZTW, right, for Zero Trust World, CTBB26. ZTW CTBB26 when you register. That'll be on the screen and in the description as well. It's going to be a great time. I hope to see you guys there. All right, let's go back to the show. Alrighty, hackers. It's been a big week in bug bounty. Lots of drama on Twitter about the whole HackerOne thing. We've got a whole episode dedicated to that, which I think should help address some of the issues. But before we do that, we're going to jump into the This Week in Bug Bounty segment to give you guys some quick news. Yes, We Hack is continuing to crank out awesome guides to bugs that go very in-depth. And this week they put out an XML external entity, XXE guide, and it has got a lot of data in here. XXEs is one of those bugs where it comes out of nowhere and it gets you like very impactful SRF, file read, sometimes even RCE. So if you're trying to land more criticals, this is really one that you should look deeply into. And I read through the guide here. Yes, We Hack does a really excellent job of providing a comprehensive summary of how to find these and different techniques for exploiting them. So check it out. Really good stuff in here. They even cover like, you know, language specific stuff like PHP expect and I believe some Java stuff as well. So really good stuff here. Next is something that is actually going to be launched a couple days before this episode releases, but this is the Bug Bounty Maturity Framework. And I know a lot of AppSec people and actually program managers listen to this podcast as well. So this is primarily for you all, but also has impact on the researchers. So let me explain what this is. A guy that was on the team for critical thinking a while back, Steve Hernandez, he also worked for HackerOne for a while, realized that there's no way for programs currently to get an idea of where they are as compared to other programs and understand their maturity as a program. So he took all of his knowledge of the industry from his time working at HackerOne and with critical thinking and built this website, bugbountymaturity.com. This is where you can take a quick survey to understand where your bug bounty program lands as on a scale of emerging to leading and how to level up to different tiers and provide the best service to the hackers and get the largest ROI out of your program. So this is like a 15 question assessment, but then it gives you very, very clear, stairs up to the next level, like do this, do this, do this. And then you'll, you know, really be providing the best ROI, right? That's the thing that's going to move you to the next level that the researchers are going to feel the most, or that your organization is going to feel the most. I worked with Steve to build this out and design the questions. And I think that if more programs took this and followed the steps inside of it, the quality would really go up. And we're actually even tossing around the idea of doing some certification that goes along with this, right? So when you see the Bug Bounty Maturity Framework, certification or whatever, say, hey, we're at established or advanced or leading, then you know what that means and you know that you can trust that program. So for any of you hackers that are interested, definitely feel free to take a peek. But you program managers, AppSec teams, I'd love for you guys to head over to bugbountymaturity.com and take the assessment, see where your organization is at, and see how you can improve your experience for the hackers and for your org. All right, I think that's it. Let's cut to the episode. We've got some really good stuff with Alex Rice, CTO of HackerOne, where we address some of these issues that have been put before the community and put before HackerOne. All right, man. So we just got off that interview with Alex. We're about to play that clip for you guys in just a sec. Overall, I feel like that was pretty solid, and I feel a lot better about how HackerOne is using our report data.
Yeah, he was super straightforward, super willing to answer any question. You went a little harder than I expected, especially in the second half. So people tune in for Justin kind of playing hardball there. But oh. No, I think that I was happy with all the answers.
Yeah, yeah. Well, even I was roasting him about the bounties, right? About reducing the bounties. Yeah, I think he needed a roast for that. I think he deserved a roast for that.
But and on the other part, like I just think that whenever you pressed into some of those questions, right? Like anytime his language was even a little bit vague, you pressed into like make sure it was clear. I thought that was really good.
Thanks, man. All right. Well, we're gonna jump into that clip. I just want to say before we do that, and I add this comment as well in the actual recording, but this was a interview that we reached out to HackerOne for, and we did not provide them with any questions in advance or any ability to edit the content. Everything said was on the record. And I tried my best to represent you guys as the hunter and how I felt as a hunter myself, obviously. So definitely welcome any feedback you guys want in the Discord, but I just wanted to disclaim that because HackerOne is a sponsor, as is BugCrowd, as is Yes We Hack, as is Integrity. But we made very clear to them in the beginning that their sponsorship would have no effect on the content. And I think we held to that very well here.
In general, Justin isn't big to toot his own horn, but when Justin started Critical Thinking, that's the mission. Like if Justin wanted to make more money, he would just go do more bug bounty hunting. Like he does the podcast for you guys and for his friends. And the whole point is the journalistic integrity and the building of the community, not to make more money. So they're just sponsors because it makes sense. And it kind of like
pays the bills.
Exactly.
Yeah, leaves me more time to hack, really, is why. Because like my goal with this podcast was like, let's get the team in place. Let's get people like Richard, you know, doing awesome things, taking care of it so that I can spend more time hacking and then telling people about, you know, how amazing Bug Bounty is. So, all right, we've said our piece. Let's cut to the clip. All right, guys. Well, here we are. We are going to be covering some drama that has been going down on InfoSec Twitter, as always. And we are welcomed today by Alex Rice. Thank you for joining us, HackerOne CTO. And hopefully we can, I don't know, man, are you ready for some grilling?
I love a good roast. Thanks for having me on here, guys. All this is going to be fun.
All right, man. Great, great.
No, he voluntarily did this. We didn't like kidnap him and bring him on.
No, that was great. And that's a good point. I will mention, you know, because I said on the episode last week that we were going to reach out for HackerOne for a comment. And, you know, before everybody jumps on the like, you know, train, because there are a lot of, you know, high energy, tensions are high in the bug bounty community right now. I want to disclose that HackerOne, you know, is a sponsor of this podcast, as is BugCrowd and Integrity and Yes We Hack. And, you know, we made it very clear from the very beginning that the content of Critical Thinking is sacred. So when we reached out to HackerOne, you know, to get a comment on this, we invited them on the podcast to discuss this. But, you know, we are not providing editorial, you know, access to this. And we're also not pre-prepping or anything like that. So this is off the cuff, on the record, as much as we can. And Alex, I appreciate you signing up for that.
Yeah, I appreciate the integrity here. You got to keep it authentic.
Yeah, we do. So with that, man, all right, now we gotta, you know, really represent the hackers here. We're a little scared, man. We're a little scared because, you know, we're reading these terms of services. We're looking at this marketing material that you guys are putting out. And, I think just speaking for the community in general right now, you know, with so many things happening with AI, and nobody knows which direction it's fully going to go. And we have years and years and years of report data of our hard-won techniques, you know, in the code, you know, in the HTTP requests, in the platform. And to see something like those terms of service lines, you know, implying that HackerOne may have the right to train AI models off of that data is really scary for us. So can you provide some clarification about why that is in your terms of service and how you guys are using report data right now?
Yeah, well, let's start with that piece. And then we should come back to the overall, what is everyone just feeling right now? What's going on with AI? But our approach here, we are definitively not training Gen AI, fine-tuning
anything of that nature on researcher submissions, which are also customer submissions at the same time. We talked about a bunch of the reasons why that is. Let's get into the detail of that. What really kicked all this off was raising really good questions on our terms of service. It does say we have the ability to, actually, first of all, our terms of service have been pretty restrictive from the beginning. Hackers retain all of the IP to their services. We have a license to utilize it to improve our, provide and improve our services. And then customers get a license to it. So there's no ownership transmission here, but there are some licenses that need to exist to operate the service. And part of that, which we should get into why that exists there, is the right to train models. Mm-hmm. And why is that there? One is because there's a number of things that happened here, but it has been in place from the beginning. And this is the oversight on our part, is we have not gone back and made our terms clear in the world of large language models. Large mm-hmm. language models are wildly different from classic AI. What AI was when we wrote those terms was different. I'll give you a real example here. The very first ML model we put into place was over a decade ago. It powered our spam prediction engine. Every time a customer is clicking report spam on a report, that goes into a regression analysis, and every new report coming forward has an updated spam classifier score on it, right? Mm. Like that's training AI. We call it machine learning. Legal and marketing teams call it AI. That needs to get disambiguated now. So it is really on us that we didn't catch that earlier and we didn't fix that sooner. We've tried to be really transparent with our technical documentation, but not the terms. And we got to get those two in line.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. And I understand that certainly spam classification is one of the big issues that you guys have dealt with from the beginning. And also that has been amplified, you know, since the AI, you know, onset here. And the one piece I'm going to read the, you know, most concerning line from the terms of service right here. It says HackerOne may use confidential information to develop or improve its services. For example, to identify trends and to train AI models, provided such use does not result in disclosure of confidential information to unauthorized third parties. So as I understand it, you know, that confidential information is the user's, you know, full, like, unredacted report. And what I'm also wondering is whether, you know, HackerOne is using any of that report data and making it anonymized, you know, whether you're anonymizing the target, anonymizing the researcher, but keeping, you know, the meat of those techniques in any way and utilizing those in training even your own internal products like the Pentest as a Service platform or anything beyond just the spam filter.
Yeah, it's a good question to get into what the broader piece of it is. There is an anonymization process and an aggregate trend analysis that goes on. We're not using that today to train AI models. And I think it's helpful to talk about why not? Like, what are we doing? What are we training models on? Which is the bulk of what our material focuses on. And I think I'd love to get into this a little more later, but I think what we're all seeing right now is the baseline foundation of the models are getting really good at finding vulnerabilities. We don't view it as our place for that to be the thing that we differentiate at or really excel on. I think the AI scaling laws are holding. The models are getting better and better at this every single time one comes out. It's just not central to our product strategy or what's needed to even deliver these capabilities to really innovate and push there. There's a ton of areas before and after the discovery of a bug where AI is providing a ton of leverage to teams and hunters on both sides, which is where we're applying quite a bit more of that analysis for things like what's the right triage decision, what's the right prioritization decision. As we were doing this pen test, how much of the scope was it covered? What areas weren't there? And so there's a lot more that goes into this than just discovery. And I want to talk about them in pretty specific ways as we can get into them.
Yeah. Yeah. So as you respond to that, you know, a couple things pop into my head, you know, you said that there is an anonymization component. So I'm wondering what post anonymization, what that data is being used for. And two, you said, you know, that AI is being utilized to help determine whether, you know, what piece of scope and stuff like that is being covered. And so how is it doing that without access to the researchers' reports?
you can view it in the Hacker Powered Security Report. That's the primary output of the anonymized data set.
Okay.
And the, sorry, the second part of your question is, how's it doing that without access to the to features?
So I guess the first part, I'm sorry, I got a lot of things I want to ask about, man, here. So I'll take it one at a time. So first, you said there is an anonymization component. Where is that anonymized data going? You said mostly the hacker-powered security report. Is it completely the hacker-powered security report, or is there some other?
It's the hacker-powered security report gives you an example of what that data looks like. So it's all anonymized and aggregated. So it's things like powering the benchmark suite, the trend analysis, like what CVEs are being discovered most frequently, and these are all pre AI features. That so I wanted to give some examples of those of what.
It's not going into an LLM to determine the, you know, what's it called? Like to determine the types of bugs that are being submitted or anything like that. It's all basically ML models or tagging pre-LLMs that already were being used to generate the security report for the year.
Yeah, but I want to be precise here as we talk about this. There's not LLMs involved in any of that piece of
right.
it today.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that data isn't being ingested by LLMs or being utilized to enhance LLMs or fine tune LLMs, even in its anonymized state.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, excellent. Well, that makes me feel a little better. that is good. I will say, just as a hacker, I appreciate the Hacker Powered Security Report. Like, I appreciate insight into what is happening from the bug bounty, you know, industry in general, being able to see those trends, being able to utilize that to enhance my own methodology, you know, by looking at that material. So I don't know, I don't want to speak for the whole community here. And I know that I am a little bit less privacy conscious than most, you know, people are in our industry, but I think that is not only helpful for the bug bounty community and helpful for you guys as a platform, but specifically helpful to the hacker to be able to enhance their own methodology.
Yeah. So I think if we like rewind and talk about a principle here for a second, the principle we're trying to not violate is the researcher's submission is the researcher's data. It is their property. It's in a strange situation because it's shared with both a customer and with us. And so there's two points where there's potential for other people to see your property and learn techniques and things from it. So I can provide really definitive statements on what we're doing with RAA that doesn't violate that principle and that practice. And I also want to say why we try to be so transparent about this is we haven't made a major mistake there yet. Mm-hmm. There's a chance that we do, and we want to find out about it as soon as we do. So we want to know specific examples anytime somebody has seen a... I think I was using this technique and now someone has found out about it over here. How did that happen? We investigate those pretty regularly. We've had some insider incidents in the past that point to that. Whether it's an insider or an AI model or a customer or any other way that it happens, we take those really seriously. We want to know about those. We want to investigate those. And we've taken a lot of safeguards to not do that with AI. And if we are doing that, like if you find areas where you think that might have happened, let us know about it. We want to go investigate. We want to go figure out how that happened. We want to get to source of truth on it. I don't see how it'd be our AI models today, but it's like that accountability loop driven by transparency is a key part of making this thing.
I was just going to say,
I think that like the way you keep saying it's our property, like for some reason, like it doesn't ring true for me because I've always understood bug bounty as like, I'm giving up my IP in order for to be paid. Like basically when I submit it, I'm kind of like agreeing to the company's terms to like not disclose this without their permission. And so I don't know. I would just love a little more clarity around that because if that's not the case, that actually makes me feel like awesome. You know, like I feel like whenever I've always assumed that in bug bounty, it's actually not my intellectual property anymore. That's actually the company's and maybe HackerOne's. And so like if I want to keep the rights to myself, I need to email it into security at instead.
Yeah, not the case. But let's dive into this for a second. I'd encourage you to go back and refresh with. I'm going to quote the actual terms here because we put a lot of time and energy into that. I think they actually work, but the Section 8 of the community terms, you retain all intellectual property rights. you give HackerOne a pretty limited license solely for purposes of improving and providing our services, so that it prohibits a ton of stuff like us reselling it or we can go through the restrictions on it. The customer has a slightly more permissive license for it. They're allowed to do whatever is necessary to improve and secure their own attack surface. So that you're right. Like, it is your IP, but you are giving up a pretty unrestricted license to it, to the customer. Less so to HackerOne. Ours has quite more restrictions on it. But when it goes to the customer, that is where you're losing. And that's where, like, when we provide really strong assurance about making sure none of this ever makes it out anywhere else, that is where these things do eventually tend to come out, is a customer's threat intel sharing feeds or their own remediation teams or their CVE advisories. Yeah. Like, eventually this makes it into the common pool of knowledge, which other hackers start picking up on, and hunters are incentivized to try to delay that as long as we can. But it inevitably happens if purely through active remediation efforts. Mm. And that's where most of this is making it into the models, we suspect. And so there's a little bit of a time delay and a half-life on these, where we view it as our responsibility not to violate that trust, not to accelerate it unnecessarily. Mm-hmm. But I think some of the anxiety that we're feeling is that is accelerating. Like, that loop between new type of exploit has been identified and AI scanners are now finding it effectively is a lot shorter than it was in the days of Rapid7.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is definitely a component of it. And I will say, as somebody who, I had one of my 0 days that I reported get yoinked and, used, and I went through HackerOne's, process to address that. And we got to the root of it very quickly. And, that person was not a HackerOne employee, but they were reprimanded by their employer that was a HackerOne customer. I was satisfied with that process. And that is a risk, that we have when we submit. And I've seen you guys personally, take serious precautions to try to address that. So that is certainly reassuring. I'm wondering if there's any way, like, what way should we report these things to you that you say you would like to know about? Like, if there's some way that our techniques have been leaked out, or we feel like our techniques are being utilized by AI or something like that, what is the best way that we can get that back to you for investigation purposes?
Yeah, great question. The easiest way, if there's a specific report you suspect is involved there, the mediation button is the cleanest way to track it. For some reason you don't trust that, grab your HSP, submit it into our bounty program, or reach out to one of us directly. If you think there's something really sus going on, hit our legal team directly at legal@ or privacy@.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I think it could be a valuable thing for you guys to set up some sort of specific email or something like that, that we could email directly to sort of address these issues. That could be something that would increase hacker trust moving forward, just to have a way that we can express these concerns and get sort of one-on-one, answers to some of these more sensitive questions.
Yeah. I'm, as you talk about it, I don't even know what to point you to other than report it. Yeah. So that's a brilliant call out. We'll action that right away.
Okay. Yeah. I think that'd be great.
And hackers don't use that as like a second mediation path. You use it for legitimate leaks.
This is why we can't have nice things.
That's kind of our responsibility is like, whether it's a whistleblower complaint or something else, it's on us to investigate all of this.
Yeah. We'll use the ML models to figure out whether the report is spam. No, that's great. Well, thank you for that. And I guess I'm going to press a little further here into this, because there's not just the piece of are you fine tuning AI models here, but there's also the pen testing as a service platform that you guys have just released. So some of the concerning quotes from the marketing material for that are as follows. Agents are trained and refined using proprietary exploit intelligence informed by years of testing real enterprise systems paired with robust verified community of elite pen testers. So when we read this, it kind of sounds like, oh, our proprietary exploit intelligence that we've been giving you all these years is going into the training of these pen test as a service platforms. So I guess the data for that, the data that has informed the prompt or the RAG or, you know, whatever you're using to make this, you know, agentic pentest as a service platform, where is that coming from?
Yeah. Let's pick this apart into a few different topics here. So one, okay, the marketing material line that you just quoted out to your Patrick called this out also. We went back and corrected that right away. So there's some new text on there that reflects a little bit more better. But separately from that, about 2 weeks before we published the marketing launched, we published a security architecture of the PTest system that goes into really specific detail. And you'll notice we don't have the confusing training language in there. So let me jump to that question around how this works. Actually, before we do this, let me just have us all context switch for a second on what is HackerOne's PTest, because we're not really known for it. It's a meaningful portion of the business today. We launched it back in 2018. We got into the pen testing business. Mm-hmm. And the reason we did it was one of the biggest things holding back more companies adopting bug bounty is assessing if they're ready for it or not. And we were running into this problem where we regularly would have companies coming and be like, we want a bounty program. We love it. We're so secure. And we have all these things where like, well, let's assess your maturity, make sure you're ready for that. One of the most common things we'd run into is we have a pen test. We've been doing this pen test for 5 years and we've never had a finding. Like, we are good to go. Like, let's go launch a bounty program. And we're like, Can we see that? And so we really started doing pen tests through a defense in depth mindset of you've really got to approach these things. You can't just decide bug bounty is going to be the first thing that I do to secure myself. If you've been doing a check the box $2,000 compliance pen test for the last 5 years, you're not going to be ready for this. And we viewed it as a comprehensive customer offering as part of it. And our flavor of pen testing, very high end. They're not cheap. It's not meant to be the compliance. We tell people out the gate, like, look, if you're just trying to get compliance, there are many pen test vendors that will do that. It's all community powered. Sometimes they overlap with hunters. Not always. Not every hunter is a pen tester, but it's about 200 pen testers from the community that do these pen tests today.
Okay.
So that's the background. So this, 2018 yeah, going into now.
I have heard of this. So this is where you guys are giving pen tests out to, you know, the bug bounty community, and there's like a lead pen tester and stuff like that. And they're performing the pen test. The lead pen tester like puts it all into the report and works with the client and that sort of thing.
That's exactly right.
Okay. So this is that, really interesting. That component.
This is really interesting because, and I'll let both of you talk in just a second, but when I've heard PTAS mentioned in the last week, I think it's been in like the same vein as all this AI stuff. And it, because it ends in AAS, I think it was all, I thought it was some new offering that was all automated. I've done a few pen tests through HackerOne. So does that mean that like, am I just like actually confused? And when you all say PTAS, you actually just mean manual hackers from the crowd?
I wouldn't use the term manual there, but yes, all our PTAS offering always has a human in it, even our agentic PTAS offering.
Okay, yeah. So maybe we're just differentiating between the agentic PTAS and the other one. But I think Justin and I are mostly asking about the agentic PTAS and not just like
let's go there now. Let's talk about pen testing in 2026. None of our pen testers are not using AI agents today.
Right.
Like, it's just, actually, we should talk more broadly. Anyone trying to do bug notification today, if you're not already ramping up on that, you kind of need to be. And our pen test community has been leaning in on this pretty early on. And there's components of it that should stay with the individual pen tester. They're really tailored to their toolkit in there. And there's components of a pen test that really need to happen at scale ahead of the pen test even starting for everybody engaged in the pen test and need to be interactive with the lead pen tester. So that's what our agentic PTAS look like. It's meant to be operated by humans. We get into this, like, is an agent fully autonomous? Is any human? I'm not that far on the AI hype scale. All the AI we're deploying has a heavy human loop component, and they're agents meant to be orchestrated by human experts. In this case, the lead pen tester, or actually all the pen testers, but predominantly the lead pen tester in the pen test.
So that, yeah, if I could ask about that then, like, that makes sense. I think everybody should be doing it. Just like we said, we've said that on the pod a ton. That lead pen tester that is utilizing this agent that you guys have built, you know, obviously they're working hand in hand with the agent, right? This agent, has it has it seen? Has it seen techniques from reports? Has it, where is it getting all this data? This years, I mean, what did it say? Like years of testing real enterprise systems, intelligence formed by years of testing real enterprise systems. Like, where did that years of experience come from? Is that that 2018 to, you know, 2026, where you guys have been working with, you know, in the pen test as a service environment? Like, are those reports going to feed the AI, or is it bug bounty reports, or is it some separate data set?
Yeah, so none of the bug bounty reports. Okay. The data sets, and I should have sent you the Sweet Arctic, but the five areas where it gets that intelligence from. The first one is public benchmarks. We try to pull all mm-hmm. of those in to make sure they pass those.
Sure.
The second one is we invested in building a bunch of internal benchmarks. Mm-hmm. A lot of the pen testers helped and contributed to building those. There are custom vulnerable apps that we've created for that try to replicate a pen testing environment. There's public CVEs and disclosures. This is the only area where there's potentially overlap with the bug bounty commission, because a big percentage of CVEs today originate as bug bounty submissions. So there is some contamination that occurs through that process. And the fifth one, which is where most of the real power comes from, is what we call sidecar runs. And these are done where both the pen tester and the customer has opted in to run the two of them in parallel. So we've been doing those more recently, and it really compares what does this look like in kind of an isolated environment, and what does it look like in this trained environment.
Okay, so sidecar runs are what? The AI is watching what's happening on both sides of the spectrum. Is that like on the researcher side and on the customer side?
That's right. And this is where it's worth being precision, because if we were doing this to in the bug bounty space, it'd be really confusing.
Yeah.
Right. But the pen testing is a different engagement model, works differently. There's pretty clear consent and opt-in. Mm-hmm. And the dynamic there is different, right? Like, pen testers are a bit more of a hourly grind, for lack of a better term.
Sure.
And the efficiency you get from AI is huge there.
Yeah.
Like, and so there's a little bit less of this contention there. So we operate with the same principles, but that's it's a pretty different world than bug bounty hunting and bug bounties.
I totally agree. And I think that especially if both parties opt in, that's fine. I am wondering what that looks like, though, just out of curiosity. Like, are you guys processing, like, do you have the pen testers like turn in their Kaido project or their Burp project, and like, you know, then you guys analyze off those HTTP requests? Or is it, you know, the questions that the researcher is asking the AI, you know, like, how are you utilizing the data in these sidecar runs?
It's all of the above for those. Okay. And I don't want to get into this because the team's iterating. Yeah. This is one of the,
and I know this is like
not being clear in AI, it's how fast it moves.
Right.
But let me just say, one of the reasons why I say it's that is something we think works really well in our pen test offering is that we try to bring as much diversity as we can. Actually, this is what works well in the bug bounty offering. So if we talk about, like, is there going to be one AI agent that can do your pen test for you? Put me on the far end of skeptic for that. Like, I don't think that's the world we're getting to in the near future. It's going, like, it's getting better. But could you just I've done my enterprise RFP. I evaluated a bunch of AI pen testing stuff, and I've picked the best AI pen tester. Like, am I good to go? Is that all I need? I don't think so. I think you're going to need a real diversity of agents running. I think you're still going to need bug bounty and community submissions running after that, even if bugs are getting more scarce. But, like, I would love to see pen testing level up to the level where it actually does that. So when we are doing these, our pen testers have a lot of individual by design freedom to use different tools. Mm-hmm. And so that means when necessary. It gets into the, what is it actually? I forget the stats off the top of my head, but there is no single pen testing suite that's used by a majority of the pen testing group that we have by design.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That makes sense. And man, yeah, there's so many pieces to this and components to this, but it does. I mean, at the end of the day, excuse me, for me, it boils down to that piece of, like, okay, bug bounty reports are not being utilized. Anonymized bug bounty reports are not being utilized. What is being utilized is, you know, consenting pen testers and consenting clients for that data to be processed and used to enhance the agentic component. And the goal of that,
pause for a second here to interrupt your question.
Yeah,
just I'll tell our marketing team to cover their ears for a second because they're here. Most of the capabilities here are coming from foundation models.
Yes,
like 100%. Let's all be clear about this.
Yeah.
A lot of the value you're providing is around this like last mile. How do you make that really usable to enterprises and customers? I think that's where we're uniquely positioned to provide a lot of the value here. But when we look at pen testing, the bar is so low.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need an AI like up to date, trained on the 10,000 best hackers in the world. Like it's just not needed to have meaningful step change functions in the state of pen testing today.
Totally.
It's just not.
Yeah. And I think Joseph, that's kind of like what you and I have talked about out of band as well, which is like, we've done a lot of experimenting with like fine tuned security oriented models. And so far, you know, the frontier models, right, have taken the cake as far as performance by a large margin.
Wow.
So, you know, even, you know, and these are massive data sets they're training off of too, you know, to make these security models. So I think that general intelligence at this point is going to outweigh, you know, fine-tuned models on, even if it was fine-tuned on researcher reports, right, which it's not, I think it would still outperform. You know, the frontier models would outperform that fine-tuned model.
Yeah, I want to mention that just to assuage the fears of buck hunters that are listening that do think like, oh, now if some, you know, model provider were to acquire HackerOne or BugCrowd, they'd be able to use that data to then make it like way better. And I'm just not convinced that's the case. Like, I actually think that so much of these models improvements comes from having just like large access to huge data sets, and so much of the improvement that have been made to its ability to hack is actually just in its ability to code, right? Because coding and hacking do have like a lot of overlap. And so its ability to write little one-off scripts to test things, I think has been what has been massively leveling up things like Claude Code, for example. And that if a company were to, like if HackerOne were to fine tune GPT-4 on like all of the reports in HackerOne, I actually don't think it would be that much of an improvement, if any. So yeah. And so anyways, so you all probably aren't even going down that route, or if there are people internally at HackerOne that are like trying to push you to do that, Alex, this is like some good logic for like, should we really do that? One of the big issues with that is that like, what percent of all your submissions are high quality? You know, it's like a very low percentage, right? And everyone knows that who's managed a program. And so if there was something down the road where you all did consider it, I think a much better model would be like, you know, pay the best bug hunters a certain amount per high quality report. Now you have a very refined, good data set that is actually, you know, worth training on or something like that. But
Yeah, I agree. I think some researchers would definitely, the more green hat researchers would definitely, you know, be cool with that, I think. So,
It hasn't proven to be necessary yet. And if it were, I don't know if it'd be our place to do it.
Because at the end of the day, researcher trust is paramount, really. And that is an essential component of the model for HackerOne, right? It is this trusted middleman, you know, that's going to work with you and advocate for you in scenarios where, you know, you need that and vice versa for the programs, right? So I think maintaining that trust is paramount. I did want to ask though. You know, we've been around the block in the security world a little bit, and you know, as AI is getting more and more traction, it seems to be that private equity does want to come in and force the hands of some organizations to utilize that data for other purposes. And I'm wondering if you guys, as somebody who's on the C-suite of HackerOne, I'm wondering if you guys have had pressure on that front to address, you know, selling that data or using that data for AI purposes.
No, we haven't. And I want to separate the two of those out because, we need to go clarify our terms to draw a distinction between the different types of AI that are out there. The selling the data is something that is more clearly defined in there. But also just from an overall company health perspective, we've been kind of fortunate. We were a little bit paranoid founders. We were pretty selective with our board early on. We've got VCs that have a very long time horizon. And we've tried to run the business really efficiently. There were a number of years we ran it free cash flow positive and have tried to balance as much of that with the researcher growth of the researcher community as possible. So we're not in a position that's, I feel like that's kind of a state of right now. Isn't like this is something that should be on everybody's mind. It's like who can predict 5 years into the future on something? But I'll say really definitively right now, there's been no pressure to sell to another firm or operate it any differently.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I think that that is the right choice. So I hope that continues to be the case over the long term.
There is this overall anxiety happening across everybody. Like, not, but I'm kind of reminded of it. There's like a pretty viral blog post that went out a week and a half ago of like something big is happening. And as I've been sitting with that for the last week, something big is happening. And it's like everywhere, everything, all at once, and it's kind of nuts, but kind of exciting at the same time. And I do think we're in a period of pretty intense transformation. Like the way this looked is changing pretty significantly. And the one message I wanted to be here is like, if you're still in a position where this is not meant to assuage transparency or help, force us to be transparent, force accountability on us. That is our responsibility. We are very committed to that. But at the same time, you cannot be afraid of AI right now. If you are not using AI in your bug hunting, if you're not using it in your pen testing, you've got to lean in. Like, go download vanilla Claude Code or Shannon or Artemis or Strix. Like, these tools are really powerful in the hands of a professional.
Yeah, I agree. Thanks for that. And on the flip side of this, I'll commend you guys and say, really, like, please continue to value researcher trust and as paramount, because, you know, if that degrades, it becomes really hard from our side to continue, you know, giving bugs. And I appreciate you coming on here and protecting that with us and answering the hard questions and letting us badger you a little bit about it. I know I asked you like 3 or 4 times, is there any component of the, you know, is the template of the report being fed to AI? And I appreciate you, you know, taking the time to address those concerns. And if you guys continue to do that, you will continue to have a researcher base that is strong and producing
as
good
bones. As excited as I am about AI agents improving security, we are a long way away from not needing security researchers. Yeah. I think it's going to be now more than ever, at least for the immediate future.
Yeah. Joseph, any closing thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, I think that in general, you know, it's like you said, the anxiety, at least in my opinion, I think that I was like less worried about it until, like you said, the last few weeks I've definitely felt like something is happening. And I think it's the fact that, you know, everyone I know is now using, you know, coding agents to basically level up their hacking in such a way where they're finding more vulnerabilities. And I think that's just like on net perfect. Like, I think that's amazing for us societally. I also think that it goes to show the ease with which companies will be able to implement this on their side, which I do think will reduce the amount of exposed insecure, you know, code that kind of touches us. But also, you know, I think that, you know, vibe coding is going to continue to crank out. And, you know, it's not even really vibe coding anymore, because I think like people are using it internally seriously, right? So like saying vibe coding is almost the wrong word. But I think that people, you know, inside enterprises are rolling out way more code than they were able to before. And obviously that's going to have stuff that gets missed. But my impression is that I think, you know, there is going to be kind of like a land grab for those for the low hanging fruit, you know, the bottom 20, like whereas before the low hanging fruit was like bugs that you found via full automation, which was maybe like, let's say 1% or 2% of bugs. I think there's going to be a little bit of a land grab for the bottom 50% now over the course of the next 9 months, right? Or the next 6 months.
I agree.
And so I do think that does worry me a little bit, because at the end of that, it's like things are really secure, which is amazing for like the security of the human race. But also like it also kind of makes it kind of tough, right? As things like, I do think they will kind of dry up. And my hope and my, you know, recommendation to programs would be like, at that point, if you do start to receive far less bugs, offer more money for better bugs, right? And then hopefully you keep us in the game a lot longer and then you keep finding more.
Yeah, actually, now that you mentioned that, Joseph, I've got you on here, Alex, I did want to address one more thing. Like, we also saw a decrease in bounties on HackerOne's bug bounty platform. You guys, you know, decreased them pretty substantially. And, I, you know, I'm not sure if you're the right, I mean, obviously you're the right rep in the organization to talk about what's happening with these products and where the data is going and stuff like that. I'm not sure how actively involved with you are with HackerOne's own bug bounty program, but do you have any insight into why that happens and why we're not, you know, keeping bounties at the same level or increasing them to try to send positive signals to the other programs in the ecosystem?
Yeah, so the security team rolls up into me. Mm. And so that I am 100% the right person. And okay. Ultimately, was the one who made the decision on that. And we've got kind of a tale of two areas here. Like you're very, the AI thing is a really fun conversation. This is the one I probably deserve a little bit more of a roast on, because we do need to be thoughtful. We need to get a ton of feedback from the community on this. This really is a feedback. So we're constantly adjusting our structure of our bounty program. One of the things we adjusted this last quarter was we were previously targeting the top 1% benchmark for our program, which meant we were benchmarking ourselves against Google, Amazon, Meta, have similar security ambitions, but very different security budgets.
Right.
And it broke a lot of stuff in how we were looking at our program. Like we're an extreme outlier on the platform and remain that. And the team's really trying to be more data driven about why is that happening? What are the different levers here? And one of the levers they came to be wanting to pull was we'd like to follow the advice we give our own customers and benchmark ourselves closer to our ambition. So we've changed our benchmarking group from kind of the cloud hyperscalers to high growth tech company. And that looks a little bit different. It means we're right now targeting about the 80th percentile in bounty. So still pretty competitive bounties are still in the top quartile, but it was a drop before. The most meaningful drop was in lows and mediums, which is something that we has a question that's been on the team's mind for a while, as we have historically really incentivized the discovery of lows. And as we're in a period of pretty intense transformation, our own technology stack, we've seen a little bit more attention go there than we wanted to. And so we moved ourselves to the 80th percentile. That impacted the lower tier of it the most. And then the other debate the team was having is, should we continue to have one critical definition across the entire platform, or should we start splitting it up based on these things here? And the team landed on one simple definition for critical, which meant there's, instead of having, at most programs, you'll see different definitions of critical across different assets. We've maintained one definition of critical across everything that we build right now. That's the one thing I'd like the most feedback on, and we're going to be paying the most attention to as we monitor this. But the team's looking at it really closely. If engagement does change, or it looks like our overall spend is dropping, we'll be adjusting it back up. But think of it a little bit as a data exercise. And I really regret that things are happening at the same time. Hindsight, we should have pushed this out a little bit further. But yeah. they truly were disconnected from each other.
It's okay, and I think you know, hindsight is 20/20, and as we navigate these difficult business decisions, right, and they happen at the same time, you know, nobody's going to make the perfect calls. As I listen to you say that, my response to that is that makes sense for a company that is running a bug bounty program. I don't think it makes sense as much for a company that is a bug bounty platform. You know, because not only are, like, I like that you guys are holding to, you know, I understand the idea to hold yourself to the top, you know, quartile rather than, you know, the top 1% or whatever. But I also think you've got to understand that what's happening here as far as the bounties, you know, sets trends for the rest of the organization and for the rest of the industry in general. So, you know, when we see that as researchers, I'm not super bummed out. I'm not like, you know, the HackerOne is not one of my main programs. You guys are tight. But you know, but when I look at that, I think, man, that's the signal that's being sent to the rest of the bug bounty community, which is that bug bounty is in such a state right now that the, you know, hopefully the most invested player is decreasing their bounties, and that is scary.
Yeah, it's really good feedback. I do think the thing we had the most debate on, and that we're honestly still debating a bit, is should we have two bug tiers? So critical for us right now is any confidential information that gets disclosed. And most of the criticals we paid out were not access to bug reports. Mm-hmm. So we've been debating do we need a tier? We wanted to keep the bar where critical was broader than just bug reports, but bug reports are in a next level of impact for us. Like the reports that we get where, oh, I could get access to a vulnerability submission that wasn't mine. Those are really rare. We haven't had one in a while, and they're much higher level. And so I do think the the both the incentive we want to drive in the program and what we want to signal to the broader community. Had we gone with that kind of bifurcated critical definition, might have helped it. But really good feedback. And anyone else who has thoughts on this, please send it in. Truly post it. Folks that are engaged in our programs, just specific examples. Like the team's really engaged, really responsive feedback. And I want to make sure we got the mark right on this one.
Okay. Yeah, I would love to see a readjustment here as a hacker, like and either revert the changes or add some additional clarity to the policy page or your or maybe even have like an exceptional tier, right? Like
a multiplier if you get access to a vulnerability submission that's not yours. Yeah.
I think that would be great.
Yeah, I wonder if like the bulk of the funds that were leaking that put you all over budget on that were all from the lows and mediums, you know, and downgrading that would have mostly, you know, cleared up the any budget issues or any alignment issues there. So
it's more of a capacity and bandwidth issue than a budget issue. We don't expect the budget to change dramatically because we're spending quite a bit more in other areas and pre-production testing. So it's but yeah, really, really Good point.
I'm looking at this and I'm seeing, you know, lows going from 100, you know, to 1,000 down to 100 to 200 and mediums
going
from—
That was the biggest change.
Yeah. Well, I disagree. I think that I think that seeing lows go from, you know, 100 to 1,000 to 100 to 200, right? And then in mediums going from 2,500 to 1,500, I'm much less worried about. But seeing highs go from 12,500 to 7K and crits go from 25K to 15 says, hey, even our you know, bigger vulnerabilities, we're paying less for. Like everybody understands, hey, you know, look, we've got this HTML injection. We ought to clean it up. We got to give them a bounty. Here's a couple hundred bucks. No serious bug hunter is going to bitch about that, right? But like if we give you a good report that's a high, you know, and we just lost $5,000 off the top of that or $10,000 off the top, like that stings. Does that make sense? Yeah.
It does. And I think it adds more weight to the earlier suggestion of we need multipliers for the categories of bugs that impact vuln submissions.
Right, because sometimes a CVSS high isn't the same as a CVSS high, right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for listening to that, Alex. I appreciate that. And I would love to see some changes on that table if possible. And if you do have the ability to put out that tip line, you know, as we suggested for abuse of hacker reports, either that they're getting fed into AI or that they are, you know, being taken by triagers or members of the programs or whatever, I think that would be a great thing for the community. So thank you for listening to our feedback on this.
I'm going to get the instructions for the tip line out there. I asked the team to consider an exceptional tier and look, please keep us accountable in this way. This is it's essential to have these types of conversations.
Of course, Alex. Thanks so much, man.
Cool. Take care, guys.
All right. That's a wrap on the interview. I'm really glad Alex came on and discussed some of that stuff with us. If you guys are still a little worried about this, that makes sense. Drop any concerns you guys have in the Discord and we'll kind of discuss further. And yeah, if we need to get any more clarifying factors from HackerOne, definitely sounds like they're going to put together that tip line or whatever to get more questions and concerns from researchers heard, which I think is a step forward. And that's a wrap on this episode of Critical Thinking. Thanks so much for watching to the end, y'all. If you want more Critical Thinking content, or if you want to support the show, head over to ctbb.show/discord. You can hop in the community. There's lots of great high-level hacking discussion happening there, on top of masterclasses, hackalongs, exclusive content, and a full-time hunter's guild if you're a full-time hunter. It's a great time, trust me. All right, I'll see you there.